This is the BBC.
Movies with Ali Plum.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Movies with Ali Plum, Radio 1 and 1 Extra's informative, entertaining and slightly boastful movies podcast. I'm Ali Plum, Radio 1 and 1 Extra's film critic and interviewer person. With me is Ace.
Hello!
Radio 1 Extra's morning DJ person and the world's biggest Aquaman fan.
Really?
No.
Okay.
This is the podcast you want for about 20 minutes of all you need to know pretty much about what's going on in the world movie-wise. You've got news, reviews, interviews this week with the lovely Simon Pegg and some premium-grade film waffle from yours truly and One Extra's very own Ace. On the podcast this week, my review of Mission Impossible Fallout and that Simon Pegg interview I mentioned earlier. We'll also be talking about the week's biggest movie news stories, including James Gunn leaving the Guardians franchise and all of the trailers that were revealed at the San Diego Comic-Con, mainly from Warners, including Godzilla 2, Aquaman, Ace's fave, and Fantastic Beasts 2. And I might even mention the Deadwood movie, but there's a lot going on because Comic-Con is a big deal. Also on the podcast, Ace and I will be reading out your thoughts on The Incredibles 2, which is not last week's big movie, but the big movie from 2 weeks ago, Fine, which you so dutifully hashtagged R1 Movies. Thanks again. We'll also be talking about, very briefly, what we're watching on the TV. There's a lot on this podcast. Let's crack on with it. Here's my review of Mission Impossible Fallout with Ace, and we invent an entirely new word you're going to love. Hang on. This is tricky. There we go.
There you go.
I wasn't quite expecting that rhythm.
You wasn't.
But I'm with it now.
Are you in it?
Oh, I'm in it.
All right, awesome.
I'm wearing the shirt.
You are.
I'm surprised if you can hear me over how loud this is, but I've reached the end of what I can wear and in an extended heat wave. These are the last clothes I've got. Hawaiian shirt and the shorts you never wear.
Tomorrow will be the string vest.
Oh, yeah.
I believe.
Yeah. I think it will be, yeah.
And the white fronts, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I am going to a wedding, so that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that was good.
Anyway, Mission Impossible Fallout is, perhaps unbelievably, the sixth Mission Impossible film.
Wow.
Tom Cruise is back and he is 56 years old.
No way.
He has not given up his mission of making...
Tom Cruise is 56?
He's 56!
That's crazy.
And he's still desperate to make you spill your popcorn because this film, of all of these movies, has the very, very best action sequences. Really, really good. There's a helicopter battle. You've seen it in the trailer. There's also this fight in a bathroom where you can see Henry Cavill reloading his arms because, I don't know. And also this... In Paris, there's this bike chase, which is amazing. But we cannot forget the London Leap, where he jumps from one building to another.
Wow.
We saw this on Graham Norton. And he basically jams one of his feet into the side of a wall.
Right.
And it turns to jelly.
Crazy.
This is the film that had a break halfway through of about 2 months. I think about 2 months. Just so his leg could get better.
Wow.
The film is so good. The action is excellent. And while I want to give you a little like pricey synopsis of what the film's about, it's a spy movie. It's the sixth in the franchise. It's getting a bit complicated. And if I have one thing that I don't love about the film, it's that the first half hour is just exposition. And by exposition, I mean, okay, this guy is secretly that guy who's got a bomb, who hasn't got a bomb, but needs plutonium, but doesn't. And it's just very convoluted.
Okay.
If you thought the previous film in the franchise, Rogue Nation, was a little bit tricksy when it came to the plot, this amps it up a lot more. But if you're willing just to sit back, switch off just a little bit, you will have the best time. Watch Mission Impossible Fallout in the biggest screen, the loudest screen you can, and it's a hot weekend, as we keep banging on about. So this is a good time to go to the cinema, enjoy the air conditioning,
yeah,
and watch Tom Cruise do some, frankly, ridiculous things. Really ridiculous.
Yeah.
Also in this movie, Henry Cavill, as mentioned, Superman himself. He is the CIA operative. There's also Michelle Moynihan and Ving Rhames and Simon Pegg, who's just one of my favourite people in movies these days because he's just reliably funny, approachable, a decent guy. And the fact that he's now done four of these films is a surprise, but good on him. During my interview with him, we happened upon something slightly unusual, however, where we managed to get into an argument about whether you pronounce GIF, GIF, or GIF. I still don't know what the deal is.
As you know, on Twitter, right, I saw this GIF.
Yeah.
GIF. Sorry.
Is it a GIF?
I keep getting told it's a GIF. I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that.
Nor am I. I'm not comfortable with GIF. Why isn't it a J-I-F then?
I'm taking a stand. It's GIF.
I'm getting GIF. It's
right.
GIF. It's GIF.
That's it. Just to make it clear.
GIF and it's scone.
He lost me at scone.
Yeah, scone.
Or scone.
I say scone.
Did you say
scone?
I don't know anymore. It says something about this movie that whilst its action's incredible and you've just got to watch it, it's really good fun. the plot is a bit wobbly, so you are finding yourself talking about GIF and JIF. That aside, Simon Pegg's great in it, but I think the standout is Rebecca Ferguson, who in the last film, she plays Ilsa Faust. She's superb. She needs to be in every action movie ever. I'm giving Mission Impossible Fallout 4 stars.
Wow.
Many people are giving it 5 stars. Rotten Tomatoes currently has it at 98%.
That's amazing.
Which is truly incredible. And if you love action and you like seeing Tom Cruise do that running blade arm thing that he does, and he does love a run.
He loves running, innit?
He loves
always
a run.
Always running in his movies.
Running, jumping,
agents like,
shooting.
Tom, I've got this movie for you. Am I running? Yes, I'm in.
I'm in!
Yeah, go on. Yeah.
You want me to be in the Mummy movie? Do I get to run? Yes, you do! Anyway, yeah, Mission Impossible Fallout gets 4 stars. I can't wait for you to watch it. It is something special.
There you go. Oh, big up to Tom Cruise. 56 years old.
56, man.
Wow.
And he injured his leg and he carried on.
Awesome. What a guy. What are we doing next week?
Next week, we're doing Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yes.
I've got great interviews with both Paul Rudd, who plays Ant-Man, and the Wasp, Evangeline Lilly. I can't wait to talk about that movie and those interviews.
Do you know what? Something that Ali just mentioned quickly that I just wanted to touch on. It is, I know it's really hot out there. It is an amazing time to go to the cinema. Yesterday, I went to the cinema and I freezed my bottom off. I was going to say something else.
Your bottom.
My bottom. I was going to say, I was going to use another word there, but I went with bottom. It was so cold in there. I was freezing.
I have lately brought a hoodie to a movie
screening.
Oh
my gosh, it was so cold. Yes, anyway, thank you very much, Ali.
Always a pleasure. My bottom. Can I just say, Ace, you have a lovely bottom.
Thank you. Thanks for that.
I have to keep thinking about how to say it.
Bottom.
Bottom. Anyway,
yeah.
So those are my thoughts on Mission Impossible Fallout. We'll talk about it at length next week as well. But let's get straight on to Simon Pegg, because as I mentioned, he is a very nice guy. And he, may I say, is one of those people I interview. I've interviewed him, I don't know, half a dozen times in my life, in my very brief life, in my career. And he always remembers my name, and he's always charming and friendly, and I just want to, you know, tip of the cap to him because he's a gent. So here I am talking to him. I might be a little soft on the mic, so I'm sorry about that. And that gif I bring up is about, you could look it up, it's where he pats down his face to prepare putting on the mask in a Mission Impossible and putting on masks. They love a bit of it. So that kind of explains what you're about to hear. Anyway, enjoy. Here's Simon Pegg. Simon, tell me more about grabbing Henry's arm in the cinema.
When I first saw the film, I watched it with Henry and Angela in the press screening. We sat at the back, and I sat next to Henry. And it was the first time I'd seen the movie, and I found it to be quite an overwhelming experience, because it is quite an overwhelming film. And it's quite odd to be in it as well. But I have enough sort of distance from it enough to enjoy it on a level of just a spectator. And every time I go, and I grab Henry's bicep and squeeze it, because it's a chunky thing. You could probably shave off a couple of juicy steaks from that if you were on a desert island.
Yes.
And you went to sleep.
I had a knife. I don't want to come across as stupid here, maybe a foregone conclusion, but
yeah.
The plot's not complicated.
It's less complicated than you think.
But when you were in it, yeah. And I gather from Chris Quarry that you started without a script.
We start with 33 pages to do him justice.
Okay. Were you fully sure what was going on at all times?
No. Never. I mean, I'd literally sometimes come into the... when we were in New Zealand, I'd go down to the restaurant in the hotel, and McHugh would just be sat in the corner on his computer, and I'd sit down and go, what's going on? Tell us. And he'd say, I don't know. I nearly got it. And he thrives in that situation, you know. He's a... Chris is an incredible storyteller, and I think he actually gets off on the puzzle of it sometimes, you know, of literally laying the track in front of the train as you're travelling at breakneck speed, like on Wallace and Gromit. That's how he writes the film, you know, and it's kind of extraordinary to... you're waiting for the, you know, so what is the story? That's what happened on Ghost Protocol, though. We shot a lot of stuff, and we weren't entirely sure where it was going, and he was brought in to solve it. To put all the pieces of the story together. That's how Chris came to Mission, and that's why he's still here.
Could you describe your best friendship with Rebecca Ferguson for me, please?
Rebecca and me are our own individual lifelines to reality when we're working on these films, because we're walking into a crazy, gigantic, unpredictable, often terrifying world, and we tend to just hold hands metaphorically and physically most of the time just to stay sane.
There was a moment in the premiere yesterday, and I took a photograph, and I would show it to you maybe afterwards, of you being high-fived by Tom Cruise
yeah.
in front of the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah.
And I just saw him walk down the corridor outside going, "Where's Peg?" Has it got old yet?
No, it doesn't. He came in to say hello during the middle of an interview, and I still kind of get all... and it's partly because he'll never not be Tom Cruise. You know, as much as I know him on a day-to-day basis as a work colleague and as a person, he still has that feather in his cap or string to his bow where he is also the person everybody knows, which is Tom Cruise, which is kind of still amusing to me, you know. And I think it's amusing to him as well.
Do you ever catch him not being Tom Cruise?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's kind of, you know, he's the weirdest thing about Tom Cruise is he's just a person. And I've seen him be, you know, frustrated, and I've seen him be disheartened, and I've seen him not be as ebullient as he sometimes is. You know, I remember when he was running on his ankle after he'd broken it, he had a tough few weeks when he was under a lot of strain, and you could see it. He wasn't his normal self. And when he finished his last day of having to run on the ankle, it lifted off him like a sort of, like literally a cloud just disappeared, and he became, you know, the kind of smiling fun guy he always is. But yeah, he's a human being. And that's the thing that people find most surprising about him, because he never lets anyone see that, really.
But this gif of you doing this absolutely delighted me. And I was chuckling away, and I thought, what is going on?
We shot a scene in Rogue Nation when we were doing the hypothetical plan of when I impersonate the guy to get into the Taurus. And what we had was, we had the actor who played me with the mask on and me facing each other through a window, which was supposed to be a mirror, and an actor, a double for Tom, and Rebecca was through the other way because you were looking for him. So it was really cleverly set up. So it looked like it was a mirror, but really it was two separate groups doing, and we had to practice doing this at the same time. And so I was going like, so I'll go 1-2, 1-2 after the mask, and Rebecca, who's just my buddy, joined in with the 1-2, 1-2, and then we looked at the camera because the guys were there doing the behind the scenes stuff, and we went 1-2, 1-2, and that's the story of that gif.
Is it ever normal for you putting on the mask now? Because you're four films in, and how many masks do you think you've put on now?
Well, this is the thing. In Ghost Protocol, Benji is absolutely desperate to wear a mask, but the mask machine gets broken. In Rogue Nation, he is going to wear a mask. They sort of imagine what it would be like if he wore a mask, but unfortunately, the Taurus has a gait recognition thing, so a mask is not used, doesn't need to be. However, so I wore a fake one in that. There was a moment when it got torn off.
Oh, yes.
But it wasn't actually in reality. In this one, who's to say? I'm not going to give any spoilers away, but Benji might finally get to wear a mask. And that was fun.
Was it a lot of this again?
No, because that was like, when you do a mask reveal, you have to put on a fully realised face of the person you're impersonating, wear it for a second, and then tear it off. And then the person who is playing the person you're impersonating does exactly the same thing, and then they overlay it, and bingo, you have your Mission Impossible signature moment.
There was a great moment at the premiere yesterday where you guys cajoled Henry Cavill into reloading his arms on stage. And I've tried to get him to do stuff like that before.
Yeah.
And he does not like that kind of performing stuff at all.
No, he hates it.
But you pulled it off.
Yeah.
And I have the best video of him going...
I know. And because I go, come on! He bows to peer pressure if you really shout in his ear.
I do not have the stones for that.
Also, if your peers are, you know, Angela Bassett, Tom Cruise, Rebecca Ferguson, Vanessa Kirby, you're going to do it.
Also, you're in front of the world's press and...
you don't want to look like a party pooper.
And the Eiffel Tower, it's like...
Yeah, you wouldn't be... You'd be ruining everyone's fun.
Just roll with it.
Yeah.
When did the being called Peg by Tom thing start?
Peg's always called me Peg. He always calls people by their surname. It's like a sort of a... I don't know if it's like a military... He probably got it from Taps.
Ah.
You know, Peg... Rames. Actually, no, he never calls Ving by his second name. It's Juniors. He always calls his Juniors by their last names.
Ah, I see.
Yeah. I don't call him Cruise.
That was exactly what I was thinking. Who would go...
I'll do it in jest. I'll go, here comes Cruise, like Jack the Biscuit. But generally, he's called TC. And the signature theme for walking into his area, when we have a unit base... There's an area which is Tom's, which is his trailer, and the pain cave, which is the gym that he uses and we get to use as well, and another trailer for his peeps. Mm-hmm. And it's like a little square. And whenever I go in there, I go, where in the world? TC World. And that is TC World. And that you can take that to the bank. That's
I will take that to the bank. But that is delighted me on a number of levels. That is up there with like singing the Toys R Us theme tune. That was.
I often sing it as I go into his trailer. I'll sing that.
Well, see, if I was to ever summon up the courage to say cruise, otherwise it would still be on my run. I'd be like, "Hey, Peg." Yeah, watch her.
That was Simon Pegg, and now we're back in the studio talking about the three biggest film stories, and we like to keep it to three, but it's tricky this week because of two things: James Gunn and what happened with him, and also Comic-Con. San Diego Comic-Con is a big deal, and a lot of stuff came out from it. So let's get started with this James Gunn thing. Now, when we put the podcast to bed last week, something happened on the Friday. And I know you're not fully across it, Ace, so allow me to try to explain it as best I can. But James Gunn, of course, is the director and writer of the first two Guardians movies, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1 and Volume 2. He previously had done quite a few, I don't know, different films like Slither, Dawn of the Dead. You know, he's a B-movie horror guy from back in the day, like 10 years ago, let's say. And then Disney said, "We choose you to take over this very brave, very different superhero team thing. Sci-fi, odd, they're not really superheroes, they kind of are. There's a talking tree. You know what the Guardians are." And it worked. People loved them.
Yes, I mean, it did.
Your initial reaction to the first film?
Loved it.
Loved it. It was different. It had humour. Chris Pratt really nailed it. I mean, yeah. Zoe Saldana is superb as Gamora. I don't need to tell you how much people enjoy Guardians of the Galaxy. Let's just put that to one side.
We are very invested.
We're invested, yeah. And that's quite the point, is that we care. And we are sad that James Gunn is no longer going to be the director of the third Guardians film. So that's the big story. He's no longer directing the third film. He's, like, filed his script, but what happened is this. About 10 years ago, James Gunn, a self-professed, provocative filmmaker, made some very off-colour, and off-colour isn't even the right phrase, some bad jokes, some inappropriate, some might say awful jokes that have come back to haunt him. Now, we don't have time on this podcast to fully do this conversation justice. Since this has happened, I've been talking about this with pretty much everyone I know, and it's just so complicated. There are so many nuances that I'm just going to get it wrong if I try to dig into it now. But essentially, James Gunn, and this is to his credit, was called out publicly on these tweets. Mm-hmm. And he put his hands up and said, "Yep, that's not me now. I'm a different person now. I've moved on and I've grown up and I apologise for them." I'm paraphrasing here, obviously. But he put his hands up and said, "Mea culpa, yeah. I was that guy, but I'm not anymore." And he said, "I accept the firing," because he'd been fired. Disney have just said, "You're gone." Now, there's a political part of this story, which we shouldn't really get into, to do with left-wing and right-wing stuff in the US. It's really complicated, but we're sad that he's gone.
Yeah.
But I respect anyone who owns any mistake they've made.
Off your head.
Yeah.
Can you think of a franchise that was spoiled when the director was changed?
The biggest one I can think of, and this is another very complicated director, is Bryan Singer. He did X-Men 1, he did X-Men 2, and then they brought in, not Bryan Singer, Brett Ratner. And X-Men 3, The Last Stand, was the biggest financially of the original X-Men series. Not a great movie.
Well, okay.
On the other side of the coin, we've seen Ant-Man go from strength to strength, even though Edgar Wright, who was originally part of it, he wrote it with Joe Cornish. It was his big passion project. They got so far as to going to Comic-Con and promoting how great the movie was going to be. He then got pulled out of the movie. That still worked. So in terms of superhero movies, it's both been good and bad when directors have had to leave, but this is an ongoing story. All the different Guardians, the actors who play the Guardians, have their own opinions. Dave Bautista has been very forthright. And there is a grander conversation about what happens when something from your past rears its head again and how you handle the apology and how things work in Hollywood. I don't have the knowledge or wisdom to go, "Here's the situation." And I don't think anyone does. No one can go, "Well, here's the thing, mate. What you got to remember is this." And it all makes sense.
Right.
It's an ongoing story. We'll see how it goes in the next few
weeks.
And it's
a case-by-case scenario as well. It's not that every situation is different. And we're seeing this more and more and more, not even just in Hollywood, in entertainment, period.
That phrase, case-by-case, it's exactly right. It's forcing, who's the judge? Who's the jury? Right. Who's the executioner? But Disney were within their rights to fire him, not without reason, and he accepted it. And I'm of the practical opinion right now, if you want any direct opinion from me, it's sad. It's understandable. Let's move on.
Right.
I'm happy that the script is done and hopefully they'll use a lot of it. But part of what made Guardians 1 and 2 so special is it's about a group of people who aren't polished, professional,
right,
upstanding folk.
Definitely.
Coming together, sorting themselves out and going, actually, we might be a ragtag group of idiots, but when we work hard and have a point and a focus, we can deliver something special. And there is a parallel, obviously, in the movies to that and his life. So anyway, that's James Gunn for the time being. We will revisit it again. But for now, let's talk about something that has nothing to do with Marvel, DC.
Right.
Because Marvel made a decision at San Diego Comic-Con this year to not bring anything at all, which is very unusual because normally it's all about the next Marvel movie because it's Comic-Con, comic books, right? But they decided not to because of Infinity War. All the questions they'd want to ask, they wouldn't be able to answer.
Right.
Because there's so much hanging off the end of the first
part.
So
much.
My brain is just question marks. Like, I watched Ant-Man. I enjoyed it. The second movie, we'll talk about it next week when it comes out. But at the back of your head, you're still going, but I want to know the answers.
Right.
So that's why they didn't go, which allowed Warner's, DC, to kind of rule the roost this year. So these are the trailers that are the biggest deals that have come out of Comic-Con this year. We've got the Shazam trailer.
You've run from foster homes in 6 counties. I can take care of myself.
Now, we talked about Shazam previously. It's a bit complicated because it was a character originally called Captain Marvel, but it's also a DC character. But the plot is this, the premise is this. Imagine you're a boy and your name's Billy Batson.
Okay.
Imagine.
This is Billy Batson. Make sure you make him feel at home.
Oh, I don't know, 11 years old? And you get chosen by some special sci-fi cool dudes, my phrase, to be Shazam. All you have to do is say the word Shazam and you become this big, beefy, caped, lightning bolt guy that can fly and shoot lightning and you're a superhero. So it's like Jumanji, right? You're a young kid in an adult's body,
right,
with powers. It's kind of funny. I'm taking it that you haven't seen this trailer.
No.
It's kind of funny. I quite like it. It stars Zachary Levi, or Levy, and it's about a 40-year-old boy who gets to fly around and be a superhero when he says a magic word.
That's crazy, right?
What are your superpowers?
Superpowers, dude? I don't even know how to pee in this thing.
It looks a little bit cheap to me, a bit like grey, a bit like we couldn't afford New York, so we'll go to Vancouver. That's what it looks like for me. But it does have a sense of humour, and DC movies, my word, do they need a laugh or two. So I'm not dismissing it. I think I need to see another trailer. It's coming out, for those curious, on April the 5th, 2019. It is technically a superhero movie. How it fits into the DC universe, as ever, Ace, we have no idea.
We have no idea. We're just trying stuff here over here at DC.
It's just a... it's like a laboratory. They're just pouring stuff into stuff.
Let's just have a go. Why not?
If it blows up, it blows up.
But I don't know your name, sir.
Shazam.
Wait, for real?
Say, okay!
Aquaman. Now, I don't need to tell you about Aquaman, man, because you are so hyped. You love speaking to fish. You've got this aquarium at your home. I've seen it.
No.
You're whispering at the goldfish. You're going, come to me, my pretty. So this is Aquaman, and it's so easy to take the mick out of it, because frankly, it's Aquaman!
Check it out. Arthur is talking to the fish. Oh,
it's kind of ridiculous. Jason Momoa stars as the half-human, half-Atlantean hero, and this is a supporting role in Justice League becoming a bigger thing as he falls in love with his I don't know quite what the character is, but as he gets closer to Amber Heard's character. Also in this movie there's Willem Dafoe and also Dolph Lundgren and Patrick Wilson and Nicole Kidman, which both of us still can't quite get our heads around. A lot of people have reacted to this trailer similarly, and I was one of them, which is Okay. I mean, okay. We talked about this off air, but essentially the one thing I feel bad about for this movie is every single shot CGI.
Right.
And if you decide in a regular movie where there isn't CGI, this scene isn't working. Let's cut this bit out. Let's move that over there. And we're going to make this line go here. We're going to do some ADR. We're going to... Every good essay, every good book has editing. When you've invested millions of dollars in swimming fish people firing, you know, robo-sharks at each other,
right,
you can't just whip that out.
So you've got to use everything. You have to use it. Yeah.
And they throw quite a lot at the screen with this trailer. I am not overwhelmed by it. I've never been so hyped by it that it matters to me if it's bad. But I am slightly worried about it.
Really?
It's a bit preposterous.
You think it's going to be overdone?
Yeah.
Okay.
I do.
I hear what you mean.
It's, we'll see. The movie's out on December the 21st this year, so not that long to go.
I feel like Aquaman's going to do really well.
I really hope it does, because DC need a break.
Yeah, they did need a break, and I feel like Aquaman will do well. I think, I don't know if it's going to be the greatest movie, but I think it's going to do well.
I think so. Look, people love Jason. Like, yeah. He's a charming, he's a good guy, I think. Yeah. Some people call him a meathead, which is not fair. But he's a gorgeous slice of man. I don't know.
We'll see.
December the 21st is when Aquaman will be doggy paddling into cinemas.
That was the worst pep talk ever.
Also on the trailer circuit is, and I cannot believe we live in a world, Ace, where we had a 5 to 6 week heat wave and we have a movie coming out that we're meant to be excited about, and some of us very much are, called Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald.
What?
That's a name of a movie. I cannot get over it.
The Crimes of who?
That is what many people will be saying. Okay.
Magic blooms only in rare souls.
Grindelwald, played by Johnny Depp. He is the Dark Wizard, and he's the guy that battles Dumbledore, played by a young Jude Law. Played by Jude Law right now, but as young Dumbledore. In this ongoing saga, it seems to have moved away from being about a cute magizoologist played by Eddie Redmayne, who has a box full of beasts, and has turned into a big saga, and it's very epic. And I didn't hate this trailer at all. I think there's a lot going on in it. And if you are a massive Potterhead, there are so many details and intricate little references, including to, you know what, I'm not going to say, because if you haven't seen the trailer, then I don't want to spoil it for you. I am much more excited about this movie now I've seen this new trailer, because there's so much in it and it seems to have more depth than the first movie, which seemed a little off.
Right. Do you think Dumbledore will mourn for you?
Loads of big names in it, as well as Johnny Depp, Jude Law and Eddie Redmayne. You have returning Zoe Kravitz, and there's a lot of people in here. Do watch the trailer, directed again by David Yates, and a reminder that it is called Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald.
Oh, you don't look a day over 375.
It's out in November, the 16th, 2018, and I think, I hope, finally, in the trailer roundup... Nope, there are two. There's one more for now, though. It's Godzilla, King of the Monsters.
Right.
Our world is changing. The mass extinction we feared has already begun.
Have you seen this trailer?
King of the Monsters.
The King.
Okay, The King of the Monsters.
The King. Well, okay. It's Godzilla : King of the Monsters.
Right.
The first teaser trailer, embarrassingly, had a camera and a cameraman in shot.
Oh, no.
Mate!
Who needs to get fired for that?
Mate! It was a widescreen shot.
Yeah.
They re-released it, and you can probably guess what they did. Let's make it a square.
Right, of course.
Let's cut that out. In this movie, some really random names, but big of a fashion. Millie Bobby Brown, who's, of course, in Stranger Things. She's the big lead.
Seven.
She's all over the trailer, over the posters. Yes, she's 11.
No, not 7, 11.
She is older than 7, and she was 11.
11, okay, yeah.
Kyle Chandler's in this movie. Ken Watanabe, Sally Hawkins, Bradley Whitford from The West Wing, Thomas Middleditch from Silicon Valley, O'Shea Jackson Jr.
Ice Cube's son.
The son of Ice.
Okay.
Is in this movie.
Wow.
Charles Dance is in this film, as is Vera Farmiga.
Our planet will perish, and so will we.
It's incredible that this movie exists. The first Godzilla, let's all be honest, wasn't very good. This one seems to be throwing everything at it because we've got Mothra and a couple of other of the big kaiju. It looks silly. I'm probably going to love it. And it'll be very, very grey and very full of lightning and roars and all that kind of stuff. I think this is going to be shonky nonsense. It's out on the 31st of May, 2019.
Long live the king.
New Godzilla movie in 2019. Wow.
What world do we live in? Go on. Grindelwald, remember. Finally, there is the trailer for Glass.
Okay.
Maybe this will all make sense if I explain who I am. My name is Dr. Ellie Staple, and I'm a psychiatrist.
Now, you watch Split, right?
Yeah.
And I've talked to you before about the situation. You've got Mr. Glass, played by the amazing Samuel Jackson. He's back. And then you've got the Unbreakable star as well, Bruce Willis. He's back. Also, Anya Taylor-Joy, James McAvoy, David Dunn, of course, is the character played by Bruce Willis. in the original Unbreakable, and it is a miracle that the year 2000 is when the first Unbreakable film came out, and here is its sequel, which also is the sequel to Split. It comes out in the UK on January 18th, 2019, and this trailer is exciting. It is very tantalising, seeing these three characters kind of playing together, and there's a great moment when Samuel Jackson says these words.
First name, Mr. Last name, Glass.
And it's just a bit chilling and a bit different. I didn't love the original Split, but this trailer is getting me a lot more excited about seeing The Beast, which is one of the many Split personality characters within Kevin, coming back. It's interesting. It's different. It's a superhero movie that has a lot more going on than, say, Aquaman.
Right.
That's it. I mean, that really is it. Let us talk about The Incredibles 2, which you saw, as you mentioned on air, in a freezing cold cinema.
Oh, it was cutting.
It's happening a lot these days.
Yeah, man.
I bring, like a little old lady, I bring my little bag, and in my bag I have a little blanket, and I put my blanket over my legs. Because it's so hot outside that they crank it up. Crank up the air conditioning when you get in.
Freezing.
Anyway, so before we dig into your thoughts, and thank you again for all the amazing messages you gave us, Just tell me, Ace, from the heart, how did you feel about this film?
I liked it. I mean, I felt like it was a long time to wait for the movie that we got. It was decent. I wasn't offended. I thought it was a fun Disney movie. I don't think it was as good as the first Incredibles movie.
Yeah.
But I thought it was an okay sequel.
I think because it's been so long, we are giving it more of a break.
Yes.
I think it's decent. I think it's fun. I enjoyed it. Jack steals the show.
Yeah, 100%.
That bit with a raccoon, double thumbs up.
Ah, so funny. Yeah.
But I actually kind of wanted more from this film.
Yeah.
I wanted them to age.
Right.
I wanted them to be distinctly different grown-up characters. But it does take place like 10 minutes after the end of the first film.
Literally straight after. Yeah.
And a lot of what goes on is very similar to the first movie. But that doesn't mean it isn't enjoyable. A lot of people have a very, very, very close, loyal affection to the first movie. I know Ant, our editor, watched it with his family because it was a big thing. They watched it when they were kids and now they've grown up a bit and you're going to watch it again. Here are your thoughts on it. And they are primarily, the majority of these are just positive, because it is a good film, but you and I both wanted a bit more. J Dennis 91 said, I took my son on Friday, loved it.
Right.
A lot of people are just saying I loved it. It's a reliable movie that if you know what you're getting.
Yeah, right? Of course you do.
It's a bit like when you took people to go and see The Force Awakens. Hey, you like Star Wars?
Yeah.
Here's another one.
Exactly.
It's good.
Yeah.
Right. So, Franny Fudge, great name. Just saw it and love Jack. There we go. We agree. Sarah Shaz 0212 said, I thought it was great. Superhero capers aside, watching Bob trying to take care of his kids was hilarious and relatable. I felt that the reveal of the big villain was so obvious, my 7-year-old nephew would have seen it coming a mile off. But it was truly great to have such a high quality sequel after such a long time.
Right.
We don't want to talk too much about this villain reveal.
We did mention that.
But we've got to be honest. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't a shocker.
It was very obvious.
And we're grown-up adult human beings, and it is aimed primarily at kids, but still.
Yeah, it was very obvious.
But still. I didn't find it unsatisfying, but I was like...
To be fair, my son was like...
Ah, there you go.
Whereas my 13-year-old daughter was like, yeah, I knew that was going to
happen. Yeah, big deal. Yeah, whatever. Yeah. Charlie Brown XX says, me and my friends went on Saturday, we're all 23 years old, and we loved every second. Everything Jack did was brilliant, and Dash had some great one-liners. Agreeing with me... Tai Raja Fari says, not enough Edna.
Ah, I agree.
Wasn't enough Edna.
Maybe they can afford it.
They're like... You know the director and writer, Brad Bird, voices Edna.
Oh, really?
He's like a 50-plus-year-old man.
Oh, what's the...
Darling!
Yeah, we can add some more Edna.
Okay. Yeah, I actually just wanted more from her generally. What did you think about the short before the film?
I really wanted to ask you about this. I didn't know if we should do this on a podcast, but I walked in during the short and I was confused about. So
oh
I walked
my God.
In. Can we just talk about it? Like, are we going to give it away or not?
Let's not give it away, but let's discuss how. Basically, it's about this mother that looks after a living, breathing, animate Chinese dumpling.
Oh, that's what it was.
You look so confused.
I was so I walked in. I won't say what happens when I walked in.
Yeah.
But that happens. And then there's some tears.
Yeah.
And then everyone's happy again. It was really weird.
I can only tell you it's one of the weirdest Pixar shorts I've ever seen. And I saw all of it and I thought it was weird. Some people love that. I personally find what happens in it really odd. And I find it hysterical that you watched just the end of it because
it was mad.
It was confusing at the best of times. But anyway, Bao, it feels like a Marmite thing. Either you love it or you don't really like it.
I was strange.
There we go. So the film, I just feel like everyone's saying similar stuff. Full of adults having a good time, full of kids having a good time. Could have been better, but it was still great.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not offensive, man. I just think, like, if they're going to do another sequel, it needs to happen sooner rather than later.
I agree. And on top of that, I'd say it needs to have the characters develop. I want Dash to be 14.
Yeah.
I want Jack-Jack to be, I don't know, 9. I just want there to be... You know, and we've talked before how we want to see the kids of Samuel Jackson's character.
Yeah, I want
to see Frozone's kids and all the rest of it.
I agree.
Anyway, that is the end of the wrap-up of #OnMovies, Incredibles 2. What are you watching on the TV? Are you still watching Power?
Still watching Power. Power's getting interesting. Kendrick Lamar's on the next episode, actually, which should be good.
Yeah.
I sat down on a Sunday. I had some time off. And I was watching The Border Force.
Oh, yeah.
It's really addictive. Like, it makes me never want to visit Australia.
It's scary, right?
It's like...
It is scary.
It's like the hardest place to enter.
It's tough. Like, Australia are really strict.
They're, like, really strict.
Really strict.
Like, all these little rules about what you can bring into the country and what you can't and...
Vegetables and all the rest.
They go in. So, yeah, I had a Border Force
marathon
on in my house on Sunday, which was fun.
I love those sort of stuff. I mean, look, I'm watching Project Runway with my wife.
Oh, really?
Like, you know, I like to alternate what I'm watching, which is really highbrow. Like, I do like to watch, like, Sharp Objects is great right now.
Okay.
Bit of Sharp Objects, little bit of Project Runway, bit of Season 10 of Friends. You know, it's a varied diet.
There you go.
The other thing I'm watching right now is the new series on Netflix of Comedians and Cars Getting Coffee. Ever watched any of this?
No, I haven't.
So this is Jerry Seinfeld, obviously of Seinfeld fame, interviewing some amazing comedians and being very self-indulgent. But the people he gets on board are so good. And it's essentially massive name comedians in cars. They go and get coffee. You probably guessed that. On this new series, they've had Tracy Morgan, Ellen DeGeneres. They've had Kate McKinnon. Alec Baldwin comes back and Jerry Lewis and Dave Chappelle. It's an amazing series with some really big names. I've loved the Alec Baldwin episodes in the past. They had Obama on.
Oh, wow.
Like, Obama was on this show, and it's just a little rinky-dink show. It used to be on Crackle, where he drives around, they get some coffee. Also, there's a great one with Tina Fey, Julie Louis-Dreyfus, Steve Harvey is very, very good on it, Stephen Colbert. If you haven't watched Comedians and Cars Getting Coffee, and you love interviews like I do, what Jerry Seinfeld gets out of his guests is very special because he's a legend and everyone respects him. And I think they open up to him better than they would with, like, you or I, no offence. Mm-hmm. So if you haven't already, do check out Comedians and Cars Getting Coffee. It's a great interview series with some really big funny names, and it will make you laugh. That is the end of the podcast. You thought it would never end, but it actually has. The big movie this week was Mission Impossible Fallout. We'll be talking about it again next week. And the big movie next week, as we've said before, is Ant-Man and the Wasp. Don't forget to watch on iPlayer and on YouTube those videos I've done with Evangeline Lilly and Paul Rudd. They're both brilliant. So is Ace.
Thanks, man. So are you.
Yeah, I'm all right.
No, you're very good.
And on that positive note, bye.
Bye.
Hey, I'm Riyad.
And I'm Alex.
We've got a brand new podcast for you.
But I'm not sure what we can actually say without getting fired.
Unexpected Fluids.
Well, what we can say is that it's quite literally the warts and all of what really happens between the sheets, in the shower, yeah. Maybe in the shed.
Embarrassing stories of sex gone sideways. We're not here to judge.
It was like Niagara Falls.
Oh! I had to wipe my nose with a pair of his burgundy wipers.
One. It's available now from the BBC iPlayer radio app.
And from wherever you found this podcast.